Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 5th of April 2022. My name's Simon, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items covering the last few days of March and the first few days of April from the local Oxford papers, read by Bridget Doole and Ralph Weirs. Before we start with the news, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help. Please note that you can no longer listen to Ox Talk by phone. Access via Google devices is also currently unavailable, but we'll be back soon.
And one last thing before we get to the news items themselves. Here are some notices of activities which may be of interest to you. On Monday the 11th of April, a trip to University of Oxford Botanical Gardens organised by the Cuttislope Garden Project. The cost is £6, leaving OAB at 10 a.m. Booking essential. Telephone 01865 511 938 or email activeyes@oxeyes.org. Next activity is the Ox Sight Clinic on Wednesday the 13th of April at OAB between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. The day will consist of 45-minute appointments with Sharon, an experienced optician who will demonstrate the Onyx glasses. These are designed to help people with central vision loss to see more detail. Please get in touch with OAB to book an appointment. 01865 725 595 or email info@oxeyes.org.uk. And now, on with the news.
Sticking to an exercise routine over the winter months is tough, especially when it feels like you only have a 3-hour window of sunlight to work with, the weather's miserable, and all you want to do is curl up under a blanket, rather than getting yourself to the gym or going for a run. Spring is now officially upon us, however, which means working out you will feel a lot easier, and you might be more motivated to get a sweat on and reap all the benefits of moving your body. Whether your exercise regime has slowed down over the winter, or you're just looking for something new to boost things up, these following fitness trends are all set to be huge this spring. Maybe you've mastered the spin bike or grown bored of your road bike, so why not try the air version? Air bikes are loved by pro athletes, and it looks like more of us will be enjoying their benefits this season, particularly as you'll increasingly see them on the gym floor. Luke Baden, master trainer, says, jumping onto the air bike, you'll be working almost every muscle in the body, creating a full body workout like no other. At any one time, one arm is pulling, One arm is pushing and each leg is driving the pedal. It's low impact, meaning you're less likely to suffer from repetitive strain injuries such as shin splints from running. David Lloyd Clubs have named pickleball as one of its top fitness trends for 2022. Described as a hybrid of tennis, badminton and ping pong, it can be played in singles or doubles, as players hit a perforated ball over a net. As there is less running about than tennis, David Lloyd suggests it's accessible for more people, and you'll still find it's a great cardio workout, while also testing your hand-eye coordination. Women enjoying boxing and other combat sports isn't a new thing, but co-box trainer Aidan Switachowski suggests it's going to explode in popularity this spring. For Switachowski, the reason women will be flocking to boxing classes are numerous. Boxing is a full body exercise that's fantastic for your cardiovascular health, he says. Not only this, but more and more women are realizing boxing isn't just about punching things. It requires coordination, agility, and strength to be the most effective boxer you can be. From hand-eye coordination to footwork, boxing makes you work out your brain whilst also working out your body. Plus, it's the best way to relieve stress in a controlled environment, and who wouldn't want that? Spring is the perfect time to work out outside. The weather is bright and crisp, it's warm enough to be comfortable, but not so hot that you overheat. But especially for beginners, it can be hard to know where to start and to maintain form exercising outside, says Faisal Abdallah, a former celebrity personal trainer. So, step forward with audio workouts, so you can have your trainer outside and on the move with you via headphones. Audio fitness allows for the coach to be in the user's ear and guide them through their workout while they immerse themselves in the great outdoors, says Abdallah. As more of us head towards hybrid fitness routines, switching from our workouts in the gym, home and outdoors, plugging in with an audio workout might be just the thing to get the best of both worlds this spring. An iconic rock guitarist and an Oxford MP have joined forces to call for a ban on trophy hunting imports. Queen guitarist Brian May and Leila Moran, MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, came together at an event in Parliament to demand an end to the import of body parts from wild animals. Every year, British trophy hunters legally import trophies from some of the world's most endangered animals, including lions, leopards, and African elephants. The trophies include parts of animals such as skin, claws, teeth, feet, tails, and even ears. Ms. Moran has been a long-standing advocate of a ban on trophy hunting imports and supported an early day motion in Parliament which called for this ban to be brought in. Ms. Moran said, "The illegal wildlife trade has major negative impacts on biodiversity, existing ecosystems, the natural heritage of the countries of origin, natural resources, and the conservation of species. That's why I was delighted to join with Dr. Brian May and join him in calling for a ban on trophy hunting. It's right that parliamentarians and people across the country raise their concerns with the government and put them under pressure to institute this ban as soon as possible. Scores of constituents have got in contact with me asking me to push for this ban, so I was glad to have the opportunity to publicly reaffirm my strong stance on this issue."
New CCTV cameras have been installed as part of a push to improve safety in the city centre. The 24 new cameras have been paid for out of a £426,000 government grant aimed at preventing violence against women and girls. Among the new camera sites are parts of New Road and Frideswide Square that were previously not covered by CCTV. Superintendent Bruce Riddell, policing commander for the city, said, "These new cameras will only improve the security measures already in place in Oxford and will mean that the chances of criminal activity being recorded and used in evidence will increase. Our message to criminals is clear. We have a network of measures in place to stop your activity, and if you commit crimes in our city, we will use our CCTV network to help bring you to justice. The cameras will be monitored from the City Council and Thames Valley Police's CCTV suite in St Aldate's Police Station. Councillor Louise Upton of Oxford City Council said, "Not only will these measures protect women and girls, but they will have benefits for all of those who are vulnerable to violence and other predatory behaviour." Through the £426,000 grant, the council says it will create a NightSafe network and safe haven scheme with police, street pastors, bus drivers, pubs and bars, and fast food restaurants sharing information. Safe zones will be created where people can wait for friends or taxis, lighting will be improved, and vegetation removed to cut hiding spots.
A charity in Wallingford, which offers free boat rides for disabled and elderly people, could be doubling its trips this summer. The Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, founded by John Jenkins, hopes to increase the rides from four per week up to two per day. A second boat may be considered if this season's trips are successful. Charity currently uses one wheelie boat, which is a purpose-built, flat-bottomed craft with a drop-down bow which enables easy access for wheelchair users. Chairman of the charity's trustees, Mr. Jenkins, said, "We have worked very hard over the winter period to enable us to increase our trip capacity for this year. We have just concluded a very successful recruitment drive, and now their training is underway, and we are very grateful to Oxford Sailing Club for their support with this." Charity now has about 40 to 45 volunteers, including trustees, base staff, and administration staff. A new online booking system has also been completed. Mr. Jenkins added, "We are all very excited about the forthcoming season. All members of our volunteer team are great lovers of the river, which makes for a relaxed, happy atmosphere amongst our crews. This all adds to the client experience we're aiming for, to enable the disabled and less mobile people in our area to gain maximum pleasure from their boating experience." To book a trip, visit wabc.org.uk. Five brilliant scientists whose development of the AstraZeneca vaccine saved countless lives across the world in the COVID-19 pandemic have been collectively honoured in Oxford. In a ceremony at the Sheldonian Theatre at the end of March, the quintet received trophies commemorating their work from the hands of the University Chancellor, Lord Patton. They came in the shape of ceramic cups commissioned from artist Edmund de Waal by the Oxford Literary Festival in its 25th year. The awards, the festival's first for science and innovation, went to the Oxford Vaccine Group leader, Professor Sir Andrew Pollard, Said Professor of Vaccinology, Professor Dame Sarah Gilbert, Professor of Vaccinology and Immunology, Theresa Lamb, Professor Catherine Green of the Nuffield Department of Medicine's Clinical Biomanufacturing Facility, and Sir John Bell, the Regius Professor of Medicine. Lord Patton said that the immense value of their work could not be overestimated, nor should it be overlooked that three of the five were women. While Oxford held its place in the annals of scientific endeavour in the development, for instance, of penicillin, the creation of the AstraZeneca vaccine rated with the greatest things that this university has ever achieved. "Measured against the huge value of their work," he said, "the modesty of the scientists was remarkable." The packed audience at the Sheldonian Theatre gave a standing ovation to the five who had answered questions on their work put to them by the journalist and broadcaster Nick Higham. A dinner in their honour followed at Exeter College, attended by many others who had been involved in the Oxford Vaccine Group's activities. Paying further tributes to them all was the Swedish ambassador, Mikaela Gumlin Granit. Her presence recognised the Anglo-Swedish nature of the drugs giant giant AstraZeneca. The company had taken a no-profit approach to supplying a billion-plus doses of the coronavirus vaccine, which had brought worldwide acclaim. The vaccine has been widely used in poorer nations.
A 30-year battle over the future of a former Oxford boatyard looks set to continue after plans to redevelop the site were refused. The cornerstone land development plan for the former Jericho boatyard site was turned down unanimously by the City Planning Committee last Wednesday. The scheme included a new working boatyard, a community centre and cafe, and 18 new homes with a piazza in front of the Grade 1 listed St Barnabas Church. Cornerstone Land Development submitted a planning application to Oxford City Council in June 2020. Campaigners from the community-led Jericho Wharf Trust, JWT, formed to develop community facilities on the waterfront, raised concerns over the proposals. Jericho resident John Mayer said, "I worry that the Jericho Wharf Trust is utopian, entirely negative, and seemingly determined on kiboshing any plans put forward. They exist purely to prevent. They look to the past, not to any community future." Oliver Holland of Cornerstone Land said, "I am disappointed by the Planning Committee's perverse decision to reject this application, despite Council officers' clear recommendation for approval. It is a missed opportunity to breathe new life and open up the Jericho Canal side for the community." Councillors were opposed to the lack of social housing in the plan, and they sought further clarity on who would audit any surplus profits made by the developer that, under a legal agreement, would go back to the City Council to build social housing elsewhere in Oxford. Oxford City Council's consultant, who trades as Evolution, estimated how much the developer could get from selling the houses, which would affect what they could offer the City Council. Councillors decided that the viability study was not robust enough and did not take account of the Jericho premium and the desirability of living there. Alison Blakeway, Evolution consultant, said she used comparisons with other new build developments in Barton, Headington and Wolvercote. Councillor James Fry said, "If you live in Oxford, there is a Jericho premium. You can't buy a house in Jericho for the price of a house in Barton or Headington." Miss Blakeway said there was little else to compare the proposed development to, as Jericho generates its own market, and this was a new product in that market. She said the developer has put forward a review mechanism that would recognise if prices go up. In a letter to City Council planners, Jericho Wharf Trust said an independent analysis it commissioned concluded that while Evolution valued the sales at £22.9 million, current Jericho market evidence indicate that the real value is £28.5 million. Remarkably, the City Council planning officers have fallen in line with this assertion. JWT Chair Phyllis Starkey told the meeting there was overwhelming opposition to the plans on both sides of the canal. "This application is shortchanging the community by about £6 million. Councillors raised other issues, including the size of the piazza, which was made smaller by the increased size of the boatyard stroke community centre. They also saw the Jericho Wharf Trust and Jericho Community Association having difficulty raising more than the £1 million to complete the community centre and boatyard, which would be built to shell by the developer." Mr. Mayer said, "So it is back to square one and the mud." He suggested an independent arbitrator now be brought in that says this is the value of those houses. That was the rock on which it fell, the property values.
The extension of a 30 miles per hour limit in North Oxford has been rubber stamped by a councillor who was astonished it did not already exist. The A44 Woodstock Road, between the Pear Tree Interchange and Wolvercote roundabout tapers from 50 to 30 mph as it gets closer to the city. The higher speed limit is in place at the junction for Pear Tree Park and Ride, but it is set to move back as far as the Pear Tree roundabout due to a developing and evolving scheme which provides for more extensive improvements along the route, including non-motorised user provision, additional bus lanes and signalised access points. The plan was broadly supported during a public consultation, but there were a handful of objections, mainly on the grounds that the proposals were unnecessary, the new limit would not be respected, and that it would add to traffic problems heading into the city. Responding to those concerns, the council's report read, The Oxford North development will result in major changes to the road layout and also the character of the roadside environment, with development on both sides of the A44. In the light of these changes, the proposed 30-mile-an-hour speed limit is considered appropriate. Tim Bearder, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways Management, said, "I'm astonished it's not already 30 mph. I approve, as laid out in the agenda."
A fleet of 159 electric buses will serve Oxford and its surrounding areas after a bid for government funding was approved. Oxfordshire County Council has been awarded £32.8 million from the Zero Emission Bus Regional Areas, ZEBRA, scheme, along with £6 million from the council itself and £43.7 million from bus companies Stagecoach and the Go Ahead Group, which includes the Oxford Bus Company, Thames Travel and City Sightseeing Oxford. The scheme will deliver the electric buses and the infrastructure to charge them in a package worth £82.5 million. The new electric buses will be used on bus routes operating wholly within the Oxford Smart Zone, an area covering all of Oxford and stretching from Kidlington in the north to Sandford in the south, and from Cumnor in the west to Wheatley in the east. They will save an estimated 9,200 tonnes of carbon dioxide emissions each year, the equivalent of taking more than 6,000 cars off the road. They could start to be delivered to Oxfordshire roads between the summer of 2023 and the spring of 2024. Bill Cotton, Oxfordshire County Council's Director for Environment and Place, said, "This is wonderful news for Oxfordshire and a major leap forward for transport decarbonisation and cleaner air in the county." Along with other transport schemes proposed in Oxford, this new fleet of electric buses will transform our public transport system and encourage more people to travel by bus. We are looking forward to working with our partners at Stagecoach, Go Ahead and Oxford City Council to create a sustainable and reliable public transport system. The funding will support plans to create a zero-carbon transport network in Oxford. Last month, Oxfordshire County Council and Oxford City Council announced updated proposals to introduce a city-wide workplace parking levy, traffic filters and a wider zero-emission zone. The proposed traffic filters will help reduce bus journey times by at least 10% in the city. Consultations on the traffic filters, zero emission zone and workplace parking levy will take place in summer this year, with a decision due at the County Council's Cabinet in the autumn. Tom Bridgman, Executive Director for Development at Oxford City Council, said, "In order to achieve the maximum benefits of having a modern electric bus fleet, Oxford's roads need to have more space for buses, cyclists and pedestrians to move freely and quickly without being stuck in traffic. The City Council will be working with Oxfordshire County Council and Oxford's bus companies on making the case for the traffic reduction measures which would facilitate the delivery of these new electric buses, one of the key benefits for Oxford and the county as a whole."
A farm has been denied permission to wheel in three glamping wagons after district councillors supported South Lee Parish Council in sticking to its neighbourhood plan. West Oxfordshire District Council planning officers recommended approval. But councillors on the Lowlands Area Planning Subcommittee placed more weight on the neighbourhood plan cited in South Lee Parish Council's objections. The parish argued the plans would lead to a loss of the character of the rural area and visual value, and would cause light pollution and noise, as well as risking an increase in traffic on rural roads. Its submission added, "The parish council is concerned with the precedent that will be set for other applications, which either separately or cumulatively, if granted, will reduce the green quality of the immediate surrounding countryside. It would be difficult to say no to other sites if yes is said to this site." Councillor Jeff Hayne, representing Milton-under-Wychwood, said going against the neighbourhood plan would be a clear rejection of democratic will. He said the plan had been adopted by 92.4% of the parish in December 2019, with a 71% turnout. It is quite true that South Lee Parish Council spend a lot of time in getting the neighbourhood plan approved, he said. It went through the planning inspectorate for approval and then came back to the full council here for approval, and I think it is not appropriate for one planning officer and a subcommittee to say, we are going to ignore it. That does not make sense to me. It has been adopted, and in my opinion, the policy applies and this application should be rejected accordingly. It is quite some way distance from the bulk of the farmyard where the barns are and the rest of it is. It's in a greenfield site, which in my opinion is not suitable. Planning officer David Ditchett said, "When we are assessing schemes against the development plan, we have to look at it as a whole. In this case, there are several supporting policies in our local plan. That's fully acknowledged. But when reading against the development plan as a whole, your officers are of an opinion that we could support this in principle while recognising the gravitas that should be applied to the neighbourhood plan." Employees in Oxford have highly rated job satisfaction, a new survey suggests. Research by Glassdoor analysed hundreds of thousands of anonymous reviews to reveal what employees in Oxford really want from work. Employees rated local Oxford-based companies 3.89 out of 5 for job satisfaction, which is above the national average of 3.82, and praised their cultural values 3.77, work-life balance 3.63, career opportunities 3.55, and senior leadership teams 3.5, all metrics that scored above the national average. The lowest ranking workplace attribute was compensation and benefits 3.38 and diversity and inclusion 3.88, which both scored below the national average. Some 63% of employees rated their Oxford company as having a positive business outlook for the year ahead, just behind the UK figure of 64%.
Sheep grazing at an Abingdon cemetery are now being surrounded by an electric fence. Youngsters on their way to school enjoy looking over the wall at the sheep in the cemetery in Spring Road, which is run by the town council. It is understood the sheep have been there for several months, but the warning sign has only recently been put up on a tree. The sign says, "Jacob's sheep are grazing on the site." It adds, "This cemetery is being grazed on rotation to reduce the need for petrol machinery, and the sheep will shortly be moved to another area. The electric fence is live. Please do not enter. If you need access to a grave or have any queries, visit the cemetery office in Spring Garden Cemetery." Town Council leader Samantha Bowring said cemetery supervisor Tim Badcock came up with the idea of the sheep grazing. She added, "We are always looking for ways to do things well and protect the environment." Ms. Bowring said the electric fence was erected to stop the sheep from getting out and running amok around the cemetery. She added that one resident had raised concerns about the sheep getting onto the graves. The Jacob sheep takes its name from the story told in the Old Testament book of Genesis of how Jacob became a selective breeder of pied sheep, according to the Jacob Sheep Society. The oldest known flock, which were imported in the 1750s, still graze at Charlecote Park in Warwickshire. The Jacob breed, with its horns and distinct spotted fleeces, made it an ideal ornamental sheep to graze with deer in parklands. By the end of the First World War, many of these flocks had disappeared, and by the middle of the 20th century, there were very few Jacob sheep left. A small number of dedicated breeders were determined to preserve the breed, and in 1969, the Jacob Sheep Society was formed. The Town Council's website has an information page about the cemetery which says, "Within the cemetery grounds, a new works depot has been built along with toilet facilities for visitors and a new office for cemetery inquiries." In 2012, the council introduced a new system which involved the interment of cremated remains above the ground in marble vaults. The vaults can hold up to 2 caskets or urns securely. Each vault has an inscribed tablet available in black with a gilded inscription of one's choice. Flowers can also be placed on the vault in the supplied personal vase. The lease period is not less than 10 years. After this time, there is an option to release or have the cremated remains scattered in an area set aside for this purpose. An area has been created for the new Garden of Remembrance.
The government's decision to ditch plans to turn the Cotswolds area of outstanding natural beauty into a national park has been welcomed by West Oxfordshire District Council. Part of the Cotswolds AONB stretches into West Oxfordshire, north of the A40, around Woodstock, continuing to Chipping Norton. The Glover review into whether the protections for national parks and AONBs are still fit for purpose was published in 2019. In January, the government published its formal response, and it does not include any proposals for the Cotswolds AONB to become a national park as proposed. Planning applications for properties inside national parks are assessed by national park authorities, not local councils. Jeff Hain, Council Cabinet Member for Planning, said, "By converting the area into a national park, it would have had a negative impact on local communities." Changes to household bin collection rounds in Oxford began on Monday, the 4th of April. The alteration of collection times will affect about 35,000 households, around half of the properties in the city. The City Council has written to all residents to tell them of the change, as well as attaching information tags to all bins. Those householders affected should continue to place their bin out as per the normal arrangements on their new collection day, after 6 p.m. the evening before collection, or by 7 a.m. on their new collection day, where the pavement meets the road. While the changes will apply to all types of collections, the collection schedules will remain the same. Food recycling will be collected weekly, rubbish and mixed recycling will be collected fortnightly, and garden waste will be collected fortnightly for those subscribed to this service. Householders can find out if their collection day has changed by checking online on the Collection Changes Frequently Asked Questions webpage, and can also opt in to the new Collection Day email reminder service by visiting oxford.gov.uk/mybinday.
The costs of fuel, energy bills and everyday services such as transport and food continues to soar as the cost of living crisis tightens its grip. There are concerns from politicians and charities that increasing prices without increasing wages will plunge millions of struggling people into poverty. In Oxford specifically, alongside fuel, energy and food price increases, there are a number of rising costs people will have to pay, such as increasing council tax, ZEZ charges, bus fares and car parking prices. This is where prices are increasing. Council tax. Council tax is an annual fee you pay to your local council. The cost is set by your council and goes towards funding local services in the area. In Oxford, the council tax you pay is split between various authorities. These include Oxford City Council, 14.9% or £332.54, Oxfordshire County Council, 74.2% or £1,651.61, and the Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner, 10.8% or £241.28. Bus fares. In February, fares on many Oxford Bus Company, Thames Travel, Stagecoach and Arriva services increased. This is the first time Oxford Bus Company and Thames Travel have increased prices for more than 2 years and is due to an increase in operating costs because of the pandemic and inflation. On average, the new fares add 43p to weekly travel for Smart Zone ticket users. The changes include a 50p increase for an adult 1 week pass, a £2 increase for a 4 week pass, a £6 increase for a 13 week pass, and a £1 increase for a 12 trip or 5 day pass. An annual season ticket increased by £22.50. An under 18 1 week pass increased by 25p, £1.50 for a 4 week, £4.50 for a 13 week pass, and £22.50 for an annual pass. Oxford Bus Company also announced it would introduce a new daily cap of £4 per day for customers using its free flow, tap-on, tap-off, contactless payment system within Oxford City Zone. ZEZ charges. Oxford's zero emission zone means most vehicles will have to pay a charge to enter the city. The charges apply from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m, 7 days a week, all year round. The daily charge covers the entire day, so a vehicle can enter and be used within the area on multiple occasions each day. Charges do not apply to vehicles that are parked within the zone and do not move. Car parking. Car parking charges in the city are set to go up in April. It will see car parking prices at Gloucester Green increase from £6.50 for 2 hours to £7.80. Oxpens car park will increase from £4 for 2 hours to £4.50.
The owner of Oxford's iconic Shark House has removed the 25-foot fiberglass sculpture sticking out of the roof in protest at the City Council's hypocritical decision to make it a protected landmark. Magnus Hansen Heine, 34, strongly objected to his house in New High Street, Headington, being added to the Oxford Heritage Asset Register. The Oxford City Council Register recognises places of important local cultural, social or historical value. But Mr. Hansen Heine is furious at the authority for trading off the fame of the installation created by his late father, the journalist and radio presenter Bill Heine, following the US bombing of Libya. Dr. Hansen Heine said, "With the recent listing decision, it became clear that people had missed a large part of the message of the Shark House. I just didn't see the point of it anymore." He added, "I might consider putting it back up later this month. I will have to see how I feel." Dr. Hansen Heine, quantum chemist, inherited the house from his dad in 2016. Bill Heine installed the statue in secret without planning permission in 1986 and sparked a 6-year planning row with Oxford City Council. He was only able to keep it when the then Environment Secretary, Michael Heseltine, backed an appeal in 1992. Dr. Hansen Heine said, "The sculpture was an anti-war, anti-nuclear protest, but also a protest against planning restrictions and censorship. My father always resisted giving any conclusive answer to the question, what was the meaning of it, as it was designed to make people think for themselves and decide for themselves what is art. But it was anti the bombing of Tripoli by the Americans, anti-nuclear proliferation, anti-censorship in the form of planning laws specifically. The council says inclusion of a building or a place on the Oxford Heritage Asset Register helps to influence planning decisions in a way that conserves and enhances local character. Oxford City Council's planning committee was told of the Shark House, told the Shark House's owner did not support the application, but it included it with 16 other additions to the register. Afterwards, Dr. Hansen Heine said, "I think it's appalling. Ultimately, it's my house, and it's logically inconsistent to protect something using planning law that is a protest against planning law. The council don't understand art. These decisions should not be left to them. If councillors don't know the Headington Shark House without it being on the register, then that's not coming from a place of intelligence or information." Ten talented Oxfordshire youngsters set off on the long path to the MotoGP World Championship a couple of weekends ago. The group of rising stars, aged between 6 and 12 years old, are in action at round one of the British Mini Bike Championship in Lydd, Kent. The competition is regarded as the first step towards the ultimate goal of MotoGP, with young riders given a first taste of racing in a safe and controlled environment across 8 stages. MotoGP championship winners like Valentino Rossi and Marquez began their racing careers in mini bikes, but these youngsters can look closer to home for inspiration. 9-time world champion Mike Hailwood, one of the greatest motorcycle races in history, lived in Boars Hill, just outside Oxford. Meanwhile, Oxford-born Bradley Smith started as a schoolboy motocross rider and was 6th in the 2015 World Championship, having been runner-up in the 2009 125cc World Championship with 3 Grand Prix victories. The 31-year-old said, "It teaches you so much about both racing and yourself and prepares you for everything that lies ahead. I wish them the very best of luck and will follow their progress with great interest. Hopefully, we'll be watching them in the MotoGP World Championship in around 10 years' time." After graduating from the British Mini Bike Championship, the next step is the FIM Mini GP Series, organised by MotoGP promoters Dorna, which includes national championships as far afield as India, Australia, and Japan.
Kelmscott Manor is set to reopen after a reported £6 million refurbishment. The country home of arts and crafts pioneer William Morris has been closed since 2019 to allow structural repairs to be made to the 17th century manor house and its outbuildings. Other work carried out during this time includes a new learning and activity studio, new exhibition and research spaces, an upgrade of visitor facilities, and conservation of furniture and artwork. The interior rooms of the manor house between Farringdon and Lechlade have also been re-displayed to provide a more authentic impression of how they would have been in the Morris family's day in the late 19th century. Dr. Cathy Haslam, curator at Kelmscott Manor, said, "We have not attempted to replicate a particular moment in time in re-displaying the period rooms, but rather to recreate the spaces as they would have been known to members of the Morris family over their 67-year association with the manor, based on evidence available. Every new placement of furniture and objects, together with each new paint colour or choice of wallpaper, has been informed by visual or written sources consulted during extensive research. As a result, the house feels more home-like. In addition, our new interpretation enables us to explore more people, themes and narratives than before." Kelmscott Manor has been owned by the Society of Antiquaries of London since 1962. General Secretary John Lewis said, "William Morris's love of history and the physical remains of the past profoundly influenced his creativity. Our revitalised Kelmscott will explore and share the history of the estate and house through the core disciplines of the society and through the eyes of William Morris as an antiquary and fellow of our society. The recent major refurbishment project and the ongoing Kelmscott Manor Past, Present and Future campaign has ensured that William Morris's beloved Heaven on Earth is preserved for the benefit and enjoyment of future generations. William Morris expert and chairman of the Kelmscott campaign, Martin Levy, told the Observer newspaper, "Kelmscott is so magical. You hear the crows screeching in the trees, the daffodils coming up the river beside the house. The public is going to see the house brought back to life more authentically." Using inventory, photographs and watercolours, the curator Kathy Haslam has done archaeological research into how the house looked while Morris was there. They have been able to place furniture and objects where they were originally. So you get a feeling of a house that's lived in, rather than a cold museum-like shrine. Kelmscott Manor reopened to the public on Friday, April the 1st. From then on, it will be open Thursday to Saturday from 10:30 to 5 p.m. Pre-booking online is advisable via sal.org.uk/Kelmscott-Manor.
Sassy's Thai, one of the Covered Market's most popular restaurants, is celebrating its 8th birthday. The business is run by Sassy Fossery and her staff, including her son Alex, when he's not away at university. She endured a tough childhood growing up in a village in the Isan region of northeast Thailand, where she got up at 3 a.m. to cook with her mother. But the hard work paid off, and after honing her skills at classes in Bangkok, she relocated to the UK about 18 years ago. Then, 8 years ago, she made the move into the historic market, and has been working hard ever since to prepare delicious dishes for her customers. Like all the traders in the market, the business suffered during the pandemic, but trade is once again picking up as international tourists have returned to Oxford. Students are regular visitors, together with office workers, although it appears the total number of office staff in the city centre is still below what it was before the pandemic. When Sassy's Thai reopened following the lockdowns, customers told them they were delighted the restaurant was back open. Miss Fostery, who lives in Jericho, said, "It's lovely to celebrate this birthday. I'm delighted. We have lots of royal customers who keep coming back for our food. That includes students who've moved to other parts of the country. They still come back to visit. There's a good buzz in the restaurant and people enjoy coming here. Some people can't believe that Alex is my son because he's so polite." Popular dishes include fish curry, crispy fried pork belly, garlic chicken, garlic pork, chicken and cashew nut, and green curry. Miss Fostery said she was determined to continue to seek out the best ingredients for customers despite rocketing wholesale prices. The prices of some of her key ingredients have risen by about 50% in recent months. "Prices have gone up, but I will always look for the best rice, the best ingredients for my customers," she said. "My staff work together as a team and work very well." Sassy's Thai, serving curries, rice bowls and other Thai dishes, is open 6 days a week, Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. The restaurant has a 5-star food hygiene rating, the highest possible rating, and 4.5 out of 5 rating on review site TripAdvisor. One reviewer said, "Amazing food. Cheap, generous servings, and so tasty. You can tell it must be good as it's so popular." Oxfordshire's Director of Public Health says people should remain at home if they are unwell amid a steep rise in the number of COVID-19 cases. As the number of people testing positive for coronavirus doubles from what it was prior to restrictions lifting last month, Ansaf Azhar said people in the county who are feeling unwell should make sure they reduce the number of contacts they have with others. However, from the 1st of April, the government no longer requires people who test positive to stay at home. Free testing for the general public has also ended as part of the government's Living with COVID plan. Prime Minister Boris Johnson last month set out his administration's strategy for living with and managing the virus as life returns to relative normality after 2 years of lockdown and restrictions. Mr. Azar, who is the Corporate Director of Public Health and Wellbeing at Oxfordshire County Council, said, "As society has continued to get back to normal, COVID cases have risen throughout the country, and Oxfordshire has followed that trend. It has largely been due to the BA.2 variant, a version of Omicron that's more transmissible but isn't leading to worse outcomes. And the rise in cases does now appear to be slowing." He then urged county people, "If you're unwell, please stay at home if you can and reduce contacts. And there are still many simple things you can do to reduce your chance of becoming unwell and of passing on the virus to others. These include ventilation of rooms, washing hands, and wearing masks in crowded settings. We encourage everyone eligible for a vaccine to come forward and accept that offer." In addition, a new 99 pence COVID-19 private test has been announced. The affordable government-approved COVID-19 test is being offered by Medisave. The test kit is suitable for self-testing at home and can be ordered online from medisave.co.uk/covid-lateral-flow-test.html.
A teen boy from Oxford is said to be a leader of a cyber crime gang accused of making more than £10 million from hacking, according to reports. City of London police have arrested seven people aged between 16 and 21 in connection with the Lapsus Dollar Gang, although the force has not said whether the Oxford teen was among them. The BBC reported that a 16-year-old from Oxford had been named as a member of the Lapsus Dollar Gang by rival hackers. The father of the boy, said to have been using the online nickname White or Breachbase, told the BBC, "I had never heard about any of this until recently. He's never talked about any hacking, but he is very good on computers and spends a lot of time on the computer. I always thought he was playing games." Bloomberg reportedly spoke to the boy's mother this week, describing her as living in a terraced house 5 miles from central Oxford. The woman was unaware of the allegations against her son, but concerned his name and address had been broadcast online, the US news agency reported. The Lapsus Dollar Group has been linked to attacks on Microsoft, Samsung, and Vodafone. Last December, the group reportedly claimed responsibility for hacking the Brazilian Ministry of Health. City of London police said seven people between the ages of 16 and 21 have been arrested in connection with an investigation into a hacking group. They have all been released under investigation. Our inquiries remain ongoing.
Oxford City Council has voted unanimously to oppose fire and rehire practices by employers in the city. Fire and rehire is where the employers dismiss employees and then re-employ them with inferior conditions. The City Council's decision comes in the wake of the P&O sackings, which saw 800 staff members collectively fired on a pre-recorded Zoom call. Mr. Mundy, who represents the city's Holywell ward, said the pandemic had been used as a smokescreen to attempt to impose worse conditions and pay cuts on workers. He added, "Working class people were much more likely to be impacted than higher earners."
Crews based at the Oxfordshire branch of South Central Ambulance Service will feature on a new series of Inside the Ambulance. The show follows paramedics from SCAS, which covers Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, Hampshire and Oxfordshire, as they carry out their duties. Staff working for the NHS Foundation Trust's Oxford City Resource Centre were filmed during October and November last year. The 10-episode series, which is the 13th of the long-running show, covers a range of 999 emergencies, from gas explosions and road traffic collisions to heart attacks and broken bones. Body-mounted cameras were used to follow the crews, as well as cameras being placed inside the ambulances. Gus McCulloch, a paramedic, and Hannah Foggett, an emergency care assistant, both took part in the show for the first time. They can be seen across several episodes responding to a cycle accident, an assault, and a lorry driver who was injured when a branch smashed through his windscreen on a busy dual carriageway. Mr. McCulloch said, "The filming for Inside the Ambulance was great fun, with enjoyment, banter and laughter, but also nerve-wracking at times. I want to say a massive thank you to everyone involved and to all those behind the scenes who make everything run as seamlessly as possible. I know both Hannah and myself and our extended Green family are very excited to see the new series in full." Paramedic Susie Patience will be appearing in the show for a third time after being filmed in January through to March of 2020, before the first coronavirus pandemic lockdown. "It was nice to be involved again with Inside the Ambulance," she said, "though there were, of course, plenty of changes since they last filmed. Whilst the job and the patients remained largely the same, how we looked certainly has altered. Masks and other PPE are now our new normal, and I lost count of how many times I managed to get my apron stuck on the cameras." Student paramedic Kashar Norbert Nelson will also be returning to the show, with the new series being her second. She said, "It was an exciting but also nerve-wracking opportunity, knowing that your work is going to be seen by lots of people and possibly scrutinised. However, I found it a great experience, and the production crew guided us and helped us get through the day much more relaxed than stressed." The first episode aired on Monday, March the 28th on the W Channel, Sky and Virgin. It is the first series where the show can be watched on free-to-view channels.
Workers from construction firm Beard are replacing 28 historic columns at an Oxford University college as part of a major refurbishment scheme. The family-run firm, which specialises in the education sector, has been on site since last July at St John's College to work on the £10 million project to refurbish the Grade 1 listed 16th century Old Library and 17th century Laudian Library extension, located in the Canterbury Quad. The columns are a central part of the historic quadrangle and had been beginning to fail structurally, ruling out a cosmetic repair. Once it was clear the columns would need to be removed, Wright and Wright Architects and the Beard team set out to find the right replacements. Jonathan Brock from Beard, the project manager at St John's, said, "It's a massive honour to be trusted to work on a building of such huge historical and cultural significance. As the columns are vital for the structure, it was crucial we found the perfect stone. The stone for the original columns is Bletchingdon marble and was mined locally. By working with expert stone masonry firm Serenalmi and Wright and Wright Architects, a carboniferous rhinestone Swaledale fossil was identified as the ideal replacement. As the stone is not commonly used in Oxford, approval from Oxford City Council Planning Department and Historic England had to be sought." Mr. Brock added, "This will ensure the aesthetic of the college remains, while ensuring it is structurally sound. The building has to be temporarily propped while the columns are removed, and despite all the planning we've done, it's still a nerve-wracking experience to replace the columns." Canterbury Quadrangle is one of the few remaining examples in the UK of the high Baroque architectural style dating back to the early 17th century. Beard, which has won a number of contracts from the university in recent years, was said to have been trusted with a historically important building due to the quality of work and faultless delivery for phase one of the project, and its track record in the wider education sector. Zoe Hancock, principal bursar of St John's College, said, "A site of such national importance requires a high calibre of expertise and quality of work, which Beard and the team have delivered. The replacement of the columns is a significant step in the refurbishment of this exceptionally historic building and to ensure it remains safe and sound for future generations."
And that was the last item for this week. If you have any comments about OxTalk's service, you can either email mail@oxtalk.org.uk or telephone Margaret on 01865 862 873. Please leave your name and contact details as well as your message. This edition and previous week's editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download if you wish to listen on another device. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have an enjoyable week.